How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
A conversation with Jennifer Brown, whose new book, Beyond Diversity, 12 Non-Obvious Ways to Build a More Inclusive World, hit bookshelves on November 9th. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So Jennifer, thanks for joining me. Congratulations on your latest book.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. I'm proud of it.
Tell me a little bit about the audience you were thinking about when you put it together, because it reads as a description of different ideas in 12 obvious places. But who were you thinking about as the reader when you put it together?
I mean, am I allowed to say anybody? Like, it really, you know, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion has become so fraught, complex, lots of feelings, lots of agree, disagree going on. This is literally like, let's pick our heads up and look around in the different domains that touch our lives, you know, schools, which is education, government, storytelling, media, entertainment, fashion and retail, technology. It was so fun to have basically take this summit that we did with 200 speakers and distill it into thematic chapters where we are able to tell stories that will just surprise you and delight you. And I think show us all that diversity is happening everywhere. It's a fact. And that it's actually something that's leading to tons of exciting developments and to innovation, to, you know, new kinds of companies, to social impact. And, you know, so it's fundamentally a very optimistic book and very accessible. And I hope it gets into the hands of anybody who is like, what is this diversity thing? Like, what do I need to know about it before you perhaps go to the leadership conversation about what it is, which is really my specialty. It's kind of a primer.
Well, that was the way I took it. And I read the book and what I was left with was a lot of like, well, okay, these really are kind of cool ideas of getting things started. And so what I actually really wanted to ask is I want to follow up on a couple of them because I said, oh, okay, I like this idea, but I want to try and make it a little bit more implementable. And so, for example, you know, you've got a whole section talking about hiring, right? And I as I read through it, I was struck with the, okay, this really makes a lot of sense when I have an HR department and a big process. And but what about when you're small? What about when HR is, well, the two or three leaders of the company also do HR, right? And they probably, maybe they work with an outsourcer and they do the hiring, right? And the leaders interview everybody. How do they make this idea around hiring more tangible to them?
Yeah, I mean, hiring, thinking outside the box with hiring is so such a tenet of inclusive organizations, and so important for us that our biases don't get in the way of our decisions and who makes it through each gate of the hiring process, for example. So just some basics. I mean, I am a company of the size you are describing. So, you know, we try to have multiple eyes and multiple reviewers of different identities if we can. And we also try to develop objective criteria and that we all agree on, but understand that we kind of have an added agenda, if you will, of we need to make sure our company, as it grows, we encourage all kinds of diversity in the candidate pools that we look at. So I think that we try to straddle, we balance the who the candidate is and what the candidate knows how to do, right? There are sort of technical skills, but then there's all these other things we used to call soft skills. And I mean, soft is not a bad word. Let's call it something else, or let's redefine that word, because empathy, you know, transparency, emotional intelligence, the ability to resonate with customers, patience, resilience, you know, these things we look for are, you know, they can live in any package. And so I do think that if we get a lot of eyes, we agree to some criteria, we prioritize the kind of demographic makeup that we want on our team, because every decision matters. What you build today will become a standard. And then as you grow, it will make it easier or harder to attract more diversity to your organization. So if we continue to hire with who we're comfortable with, which is called, actually, there's a name for that kind of bias. It's affinity bias. Who we're comfortable with, who succeeded in a role in the past, or who went to the same school that we did, or, you know, whatever criteria sort of reassure us. You know, I think the challenge is to say to ourselves, I want to maybe think outside the box here, because I need that new kind of problem solving. I need a different lens. You know, I actually need someone to bring a different set of filters to my business than I or somebody that has the same identity, schooling, background, experience, employers that I have had. We're going to have the same blind spots. So that is the rationale for this. It's not like a moral exercise, although some of us believe that it is. It doesn't need to be. It can be an exercise around innovation and creativity and getting what I call that creative abrasion that makes companies great. And also in the customer service business, this stuff is super important. I mean, the technical and the personal are, you know, intertwined, and the creative problem solving and everything like that. So, you know, I would say, like, really think about your hiring processes, get feedback from candidates about how did it feel to go through our process? Did we ever create an experience that didn't feel inclusive? I would investigate that, because often we can't see our own biases and filters in action. We're sort of incapable of noticing that. And if somebody tells you the truth, that's such a gift, you know, because then you can take that and say, well, how do we want to do this differently the next time?
I keep talking about the fact that I like selling to as many people as I can, and I need to understand them in order to do a good job of that. You mentioned identity, and you've got a whole section about embracing identity. And I wanted to ask, and this is one of those questions that, like, I want to come at it from the good perspective. Mm. What does that mean when your identity is white, male, and straight? Like, because, you know, I'm describing myself, I'm describing a lot of my audience. There's a positive and a negative way of embracing that identity.
That's right.
What's the guidance to leverage embrace identity when your identity is white, male, and straight, to make that a positive embrace?
Yeah. And what you're saying is your identity is overrepresented in your field, right? And you've told me a little bit about it. And that's true actually in a lot of fields, especially at the leadership level. So some of you who are small business owners may also be reflecting, wow, it's very diverse, actually, in the lower level talent. But as we get to leadership, it loses that. And that's very common in large organizations, too. So this, you're not alone. It's a persistent challenge. But I would say, you know, the white straight male leader has a huge opportunity to practice inclusion, to value different kinds of diversity. And also that leader, who's to say that leader isn't diverse in invisible ways? There's so many things under our waterline, so to speak, if we're like icebergs, right? There's 90% that you can't see. And a lot of us are accustomed to not raising those things or bringing those things, you know, because maybe we think they don't matter or we're ashamed of them or we don't think, well, that's not diversity. But I believe everybody has some level of a diversity story. Everybody understands what exclusion feels like. You know, we can come from a place of empathy and relating to that in that way. And we are, I mean, somebody's diverse or not diverse is such a false, you know, descriptor. I mean, I'm LGBTQ, but I can walk through the world and not have anybody know that because of the way that I present my gender and behavior. And so it's an interesting thing to reveal that and then to remember and remind myself that that person sitting across from me has so much that I don't know that I'm not able to perceive. So I think that's a way to describe diversity differently that's more inclusive of all of us, even those you don't expect. But I think the allyship that those of us who've traditionally had perhaps more access to leadership roles, you know, the opportunity we have to activate our voice is enormous. You know, we have I walk through the world and am safer in this skin. And so I'm mindful of that every day. I think about, that's a source for me of empathy and understanding for what somebody else has achieved, what, you know, headwinds might have faced that person in terms of accomplishing what they've accomplished. And I think being able to challenge my own self and my own biases about like what a leader or a manager, you know, looks like, you know, what, you know, and then thinking about customers and letting that drive us too, to say my job, I might be a part of a certain group, but my job as a leader is to build, you know, an organization composed of as many different identities and that will relate to my customers, that will innovate for the company, that will, that represent the future truly. And so I think that we have a big role to play but we can get very set on our identity in that sense, in a negative sense, and say how limited I am. I don't really think of my limitations. I do talk about, you know, the biases of privilege, you know, and things that I'm not going to understand, but as a leader, I know that I can exercise my voice and there are certain access points that I have. There are certain things that I can make happen maybe more easily because I have the permission to do that. And that's a huge opportunity to take a leadership role with inclusion and really champion talent, you know, and as you all grow your companies, like I've been doing for almost 20 years, I have just had my eyes opened to so many amazing people that now work for us that bring, you know, things that I could never bring. I could never replicate that. If I hired everybody that looked like me, I'd be in an echo chamber and we would have huge blind spots for problem solving and innovation that would really hurt my business. So, you know, this is one of those, I think it's an imperative. And if we feel like we don't have anything to contribute, we're wrong. But we need to figure out kind of a different way into our contribution and being that ally, you know, standing up for mentoring, you know, challenging ourselves. You know, this is the work those of us need to do who have not had to cope with this on a day-to-day basis as we walk through the world in our bodies. And, you know, I think it's, I don't know, I think it's cool. It's super challenging. But your leadership is, that's why you sign up to lead.
I always quip in mysteries, there's margin, right? Hard problems are the ones we're solving.
Oh, I love that saying. I'm going to steal that.
Please do, because in those, if it was easy, everyone would do it and it would be commoditized. I like hard problems because I make money off of solving hard problems.
Ooh, and hard problems require diversity of thought. Yes. And the creative abrasion, right? That happens when we disagree, but then we come to a 1+1=3. unexpectedly, you know, and that's the power of diversity unleashed. If you can figure out, so that I just want to define diversity is the who, but inclusion is how. So the inclusion is how do I ensure that I get the most, or we get the most out of all kinds of diverse identities on the team like that. So the piece of the how is important, not just lining up, you know, representation, but what do you do with that dynamic? How do you encourage that creative abrasion and the pull through, the potential of that, and the results from that is really where the art of how to manage it comes into play. And that's what the book is my previous book is very much about that.
Okay. So one of the things that I was struggling with actually is thinking about, I love the references to the 15% pledge, and there are, for those that didn't know, it's a U.S. Nonprofit encouraging retailers to pledge about, you know, at least 15% of their shelf space to Black-owned businesses. And what I was struck with was I almost didn't know how to get started when I looked at it from a tech perspective. So for example, if I'm a small IT provider, my job is to go out and find solutions. I'm generally looking at a long list of technical specifications for those products that come through my distribution chain, or they come through, you know, I have to do all the research on that, where literally the creative team behind it isn't necessarily one of the criteria that I would be looking for at all. I'm literally just looking at a technical specification.
Right.
Am I trying to apply an idea to the wrong area, or am I looking at it wrong? How do you take ideas like this and translate it to that kind of technical work?
That's such a great question. I mean, like if you're buying from, or you're procuring what you need, for example, from very few players, and there's a lack of diversity amongst those players, like, cause they're the big titans or whatever, or they're your go-to people. The concept of supplier diversity is very powerful. So even small companies can make different procurement choices around even little things, you know, where you may say to yourself, I've been working with this supplier forever and I'm looking at all my suppliers and they all look this way, which is probably what you're doing right now, listening to this.
Right.
Think, wow, there is not a single female owned parts manufacturer that I, you know, contract with, or for office space, or for, you know, HR serve. I don't know, just like we buy a lot of things when you're running small companies and you're building them. So, you know, I think going through the discipline as companies to look at all the ways we spend money and who we spend the money with, and do we have alternatives and can we make different choices, to your point about the products on the shelves, I believe that's actually good organizational hygiene. It is the way that economically you can make a difference. So I love it because it's not so performative. We talk a lot about performative allyship, right? Oh, you know, we'll say the right things and post the black square and whatever. But when you diversify your spend strategically and you start to mix it up, it's extremely powerful economic impact that you can have. And I'm certified as woman-owned and LGBT-owned. And so in my work with large corporations, they seek us out through certain databases that exist, and they give us the opportunity to bid on an RFP that might have just gone to the incumbent. And we get a chance to shine and to show, you know, our innovation and creativity and our sort of unique character. Because, you know, when you were talking about the margins earlier, the kinds of companies that grow up on the margins are super creative, right? We're the ones that are like trying to get in there, you know, and differentiate ourselves. We work harder, you know, we work differently. And the thinking is, with supplier diversity, we bring innovation to whoever hires us. So I think too, that this is not, again, not just an exercise, but it's an invitation to a new relationship and a new collaboration. And you never know where that could go. So beyond the impact of spend, it's also an opportunity for partnerships to grow and take your business to a place that you might not be able to predict, because we are our ecosystems as small businesses. Like, we rely on that web design company, that PR firm, right? We have choices. And the discipline then becomes, so wait a second, we're evaluating three firms. They're all led by and owned by white men. Mm-hmm. Let's think about how can we broaden this and make our process, you know, more inclusive, and how can we really, you know, if this is a goal to diversify that ecosystem, like let's add that to our, you know, filters and our categories that we're evaluating, you know, all things being equal or roughly similar. You know, what's going to give something a leg up or somebody a leg up? I would argue, these are all opportunities that really matter. So I would say, take a hard look at that. And I mean, that's a whole really cool area called supplier diversity that's really big for the corporate world. I mean, they have something called the $1 billion roundtable, where some of the biggest companies in the world spend billions with diverse suppliers. And they come together and they compare and they hold each other accountable and they say, so like, you know, how are you increasing your numbers? How are you year over year getting better? So if the big ones are doing it, like when we're small companies, we should say, you know, I can do that too. We can do that.
So do you think that this is a role? You've talked, your book recommends like every company should have a chief diversity officer. For a small company, we know that oftentimes those are more roles. Like if someone's thinking about taking that on as a part of their role, like as a role, but not a full-time role.
Yeah.
Because that's what small companies do, is we wear lots of hats, but we understand the idea of roles, because as we grow, we want to make sure that particular role gets handled by a person. What are the criteria you'd advise somebody small to think about? Well, I'm going to make a chief diversity officer role because I want to think about it, but it's a shared responsibility for a person.
Right.
What are the things they should be thinking about that person do?
Yeah. What a great question. So I do think you can be a small company and have even a little steering committee, right? You can, depending on how big you are, you could have 3 or 4 people even. So it's not just one person, but it is shared. And it is, as we call, side of the desk. But you'll find, I think, if you've got millennial and Gen Z talent in your organization, they're super into this topic. I mean, this is probably not news. They want to roll up their sleeves and talk about this topic because they're passionate about it. And they want to work at a place where they're seen and heard and valued, and where they feel an alignment of values. And inclusion is one of the top values, I think, for Generation Z, if I'm not mistaken, literally in the top 5. So they want that out of an employer, right? They want that to be talked about. So I would say, whether it's a person or a fractional part of a person or fractional of several people, but it's a passion, you know, think about, you don't need to call it chief diversity officer, that wouldn't be appropriate, but think about a steering committee model. Think about a working group, a task force. Think about a champion, you know, an advocate, an ombudsperson, you know, somebody who knows something about the topic. Ideally, they've seen it happen in other organizations, because what makes us smart about this work is it's not really something you can put in a book. It's really what you've seen other companies do that really works, you know. And then have this group sort of look through things like job descriptions. Where are we marketing for talent? What is our interview process like we talked about earlier? What is our brand saying or not saying? Are we silent on issues that are important to our current and future workforce that we're trying to attract? What is the customer feedback about, you know, who the representatives that we're putting in front of them, you know? And you can really activate a person or a small group to really like gather this and then be thoughtful about it and say, so let's make some kind of quick, you know, strategic plan that, you know, we're working the steps, we meet regularly, and there is an accountability there for sure. And I know, believe me, I'm a founder, and I want folks to, you know, get fired up about stuff and hold us accountable to be better. And I know that doesn't come without risk. So there is a balance of the invitation to engage in these conversations with some boundaries and with some role clarity and all that fun stuff too. But I think if you keep your head buried in the sand though, instead, and you're not doing anything, I really think that's not wise. Because the world is changing. We have to change with it. We have to change ahead of it. You know, we have to change ahead of our future talent. They're coming in and we're probably not prepared, especially small companies. We bootstrap these in our image, basically. Like if you're a founder and you're listening to this, you know, chances are you built it in your own image because that's who you knew, you know, that was the easiest people to invite and the people you trusted and were comfortable with and the customers that were attracted to you, maybe because they felt an affinity to you too. Now, all of a sudden you're in the whitewater of change where customers are changing, talent is changing, the conversation's changing. And I just don't want people to be left behind. I want them to begin to build the muscle now. So you've got a great resource inside your workforce, you know, no doubt. I mean, if you're a 5-person company, 10-person company, 20, 30, you can begin to put these kind of committee structures in place that are volunteer only. And if you get to 50, 60, 70 people, you might consider having an HR person hybrid DEI who's looking at people management with a D&I lens on it, you know, and advising in a more formal capacity, who has some, you know, certifications and things like that. If you work with an HR firm, you know, make sure they know their way around DEI. Hold them accountable to know that, because I find where I sit, Dave, it's like, you know, I don't need enough HR people who are competent with this for small businesses, you know, and I sort of watch that space, that small business kind of ecosystem, and or PR firms or whatever. Like, pick partners that you can learn from, you know, that are really on the cutting edge of some of this stuff, because, you know, that's one of the greatest ways to learn is to be guide. You don't want to be guiding your partners. You want your partners to be bringing best practices to you and saying, well, why don't we have this? And why don't we have that? And why don't we do this? And let's introduce this process. And I also, let me just say, book clubs, so great for small businesses, like really good. Like, all of my books are fun to read as a small group. We provide discussion questions, and I think it's very neutral. And it's very, people can get so many different things out of the text, and it's just a wonderful place to have a constructive conversation and get the engine warmed up and really actually awaken people's interest and commitment in this. You know, just the fact that you have something like that going on is, I think, going to engage people and send a message to people that this topic is important to this firm. And that is a retention technique, I think, yeah, especially with this young generation.
Yeah. And I think you've answered my always question to my audience is, why do we care? And I think you've done a good job of answering, those are the reasons why we care. Well, Jennifer, if people are interested in learning more, what's a great way for them to learn more about what you're doing?
I love that. So, speaking of book clubs, I have three books, as you mentioned. I think they're all on Amazon. So look me up as an author, Jennifer Brown, on Amazon. And leave reviews if you love them, and get in touch with us at info@jenniferbrownconsulting.com. If you'd like to get our discussion guide for facilitated book clubs, we'd be happy to share it with you and just be in touch with you and support you. I think, I have a podcast called The Will to Change. So that's a wonderful place to just like get your head expanded. I talk to a lot of corporate leaders, CEOs, those types. And then we do consulting, but not typically for companies under a certain size. But if somebody's listening to this and as much is bigger and growing and you're getting to hundreds of people, good job. that's ahead for me. That might be a phase where you want to make an investment with an external partner too, and some training or, you know, whatever you want to investigate. So we would love to hear from you. info@JenniferBrownConsulting. And I keynote a lot, and I love speaking. I'm an ex-performer. So, you know, if anybody knows of an event that they think this message would resonate, that would be fun to hear about too, even virtually. I'm all day long. I'm Zooming.
Jennifer, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
When it comes to delivering cybersecurity services to your client, there's a lot to consider, and even more at stake. Firewalls and antivirus don't provide enough protection, and adding more tools to an already complex tech stack is expensive and difficult to manage. The Field Effect Partner Momentum Program and their award-winning security portfolio solves these issues by enabling MSPs to deliver complete cybersecurity protection, unlock new revenue streams, simplify operations, and stand out from the competition. Learn more and connect with the Field Effect team today by visiting fieldeffect.com/MSP Radio. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Want to reach our listeners? MSPradio.com/engage.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.